Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, just like any other time in Texas. Wonderful time in Texas.
Just like any other time. Is there ever a bad time here? I mean,
never. You know, when I see the headlines every day about everything going on in the world, I say, thank God we're in Texas.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lord. We need to be in Texas, you know?
It's getting harder and harder to find places that are good places to be anywhere in the world. So, yeah, it's all right in front of our face. Glad that we're here.
That's right. And I keep going back to the old days and thinking about, you know, how life used to be so dadgum simple and that it's not now.
No.
And somebody told me today that they were delivering hay, and this guy cut them off.
What?
And then, you know, was that rude deal they do. And I said, you know, he was from California, no doubt about it.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm sure. They drive crazy out there.
Because, you know, if you're driving down the road, the highway, and they can see you've got your blinkers on, and you need to make this turn, everybody I know would wait for you because it's not going to take you, but 4 or 5 seconds to make a left turn.
Yeah.
They didn't do that. They spun around him almost off the road and then were rude.
Really? They got that mad?
I'm sure it was somebody from California.
Had to have been.
Yeah.
It's not anybody.
Would have sat there. I mean, life will wait for you.
Yeah.
2 or 3 seconds isn't going to hurt you.
No, it's not going to make any difference whatsoever at all, ever.
And it might lengthen your life a little.
Well, yeah, that's true. Now that is true.
You get a hay truck, you know.
You put it that way, and now all of a sudden, okay, being patient, letting somebody turn for 3 or 4 seconds could literally save you 30 or 40 or 50 years of your life. Wow.
That's exactly right. And the hay truck, the guy said, Faye, it's so hard to get in your gate. I said, I know it. And he said, in the traffic. And, you know, this little road, just a little family road, so to speak. And these people now are cutting through. They're cutting through because they don't want the traffic.
Oh.
So now they're putting the traffic on my little road.
Oh, no. So now you got people racing up and down your street now, don't you?
That's right. Oh. And, you know, they're going to make it dangerous for it all.
Yeah. I mean, my word, people will start, you know, cutting people off and drag racing. Before you know it, you'll look out the window and people going 100 miles an hour down the street. And you've got, you know, families, you got kids, you got animals all over the place. I know your neighbors based on your next door and the blotter and all that. It's like, you know, you got ducks and chickens and turkeys and puppies.
That's right.
And who knows what. And people
and
just...
when these people advertise, you know, it's just too funny.
Yeah.
And that parakeet that was lost, you know, they found their parakeet, which is a good thing. You know, but there's always something lost. But when the turtle gets lost, I think it's the most hilarious thing in the world. That they put that on there. Oh, my gosh, if you see my turtle, return it.
Now
that's just too much.
It is.
Crazy turtle.
I don't think there's any other place you can go in the world and hear something like that. I've lost my turtle. Help.
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And, of course, everybody's finding all these baby rabbits right now.
Ooh.
I don't know how they're getting away from their moms. And so they're wondering, how do you take care of a baby rabbit?
Oh, my.
It's very, very hard. As a child, I had baby rabbits, and they will not live very long in captivity.
Really? I didn't know that.
There's something about wild rabbits. They just don't do well with people.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Yeah, it's hard to raise a baby rabbit.
Boy, I didn't know that.
A grown rabbit would be fine if it was wild, but a baby rabbit is very hard to raise.
Huh. Well, that's interesting.
But a lot of people have found them lately, and they're just little tiny things. And they're saying, how do we take care of them, you know? And they found this goose down at the pond, and it was hurt. And they wanted to know if a wildlife person could come and get it.
They found a goose.
A goose with a hurt wing. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
But remember, there's a lot of people here they're town folks.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they don't know about a lot of things.
No, no. City folks don't really have any idea about how to take care of anything.
No, they don't. And when they find these things in their yards, they just go crazy.
Yeah.
They just don't know what to say or do.
They don't know who to call. They don't know what to do. They don't know. I tell you, though, I've never seen anybody who has found some of the things that that you have found. And the things that go on in your neck of the woods are very different than any place else. So that's a very, even for city, even for country folk, it's still a little bit out there in your neighborhood.
Yeah, because these people move here and they have never been around wild animals, you know.
Yeah.
And they want to domesticate them, and they don't know what to do, really. You know?
Help, oh, I found a goose in my yard. Oh,
yeah,
my.
And it's got a hurt wing, and give me some help.
Well, did somebody at least go help? Do you know how it turned out? Or
I don't know. I haven't seen it lately. I'm sure I'll see it.
Oh, wow. Oh, my.
You know,
I never heard anything like that before in my life. This is your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. It's got a lot of good things. People should go to the website and look everything up. They can go back and do the shows that they might have missed.
Oh, yeah, there's archived shows. We save them all there, and people can listen to them at any time they want to.
And I had some people this week that did. They had called me. I told them to go to the website. They did, and they told me they'd listened to several of the shows.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yes.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I know a lot of times you've always said that if people are especially, you know, out of town and they, you know, they're on vacation for a while, you know, maybe, you know, gone for a couple of weeks or maybe over to Europe for a couple of months or whatever, and then they'll come back and they'll listen to them, you know, for past shows and stuff like that. So that's
right.
Great.
And then I had the guy that called and he said, I want to talk to you about that 24% annuity. I said, wait a minute. You've got it all wrong. I said, you're not listening real good. I said, the life settlement, the average is 24%. The annuities, the average is 10%. There's a big difference there.
Well, it can
I
be
didn't
confusing.
Want it misleading.
No. We want to make sure that everything is really, really clear. So, all right. So then we should probably go over some annuities. It's not 24. It's average about 10, right?
That's right. And annuities have got a lot of great features. First of all, you can take 10% a year out. Right now, there's a bonus of 14%. So that gives you extra interest in your account immediately. That's accredited immediately. The interest is locked in once a year. So you go all year, it makes the interest, it locks it in. It's not like the stock market where it's still just up and down and all this. Tax deferral. This is a big deal with me. If you can earn money tax deferred, it's going to grow faster. And it's not taxed till you take it out, okay? And then it's compound interest. You can do it if you have a trust. You can put a trust account in there. You can put a joint account. You can put a Roth IRA, a regular IRA. There's a lot of ways you can do this. You can change beneficiaries. You can have more than one beneficiary. You and your wife can be each other's beneficiary, then either the children or the grandchildren. You can skip a generation. There's just a lot of things you can do with an annuity. Annuities have been around 100 years. One of the companies that we use has been in business 100 years and more.
Wow.
They're worth $60 billion, and they own a sister company, and I don't even know what it's worth. And it's owned by a company out of Dallas, Texas. So it's a Texas company. All kinds of good things.
Yeah.
So you're doing business with Texans.
Yeah. And they've been around for a long time, and they've got the resources to back it all up. So, I mean, golly. And now, so for a new, what exactly, and I don't, this is probably a loaded question. I don't even know how to even answer this, but
okay,
what is an annuity? I mean, what is it? So
an annuity is a contract with a life insurance company that you put your money in and they pay you interest and hold your principal for a set length of time. Okay?
All right.
That's an annuity. It's an insurance product. They've been doing it for years and years, and it's a retirement income. It's just so many things, many different ways you can say annuity. These are fixed index annuities, so they're safe. They're not in the stock market. They mirror the stock market, but they're never directly in the stock market. That's what makes them safe. If you buy a variable annuity, they are in the stock market. You can lose money. And most people do not do variable annuities because of the risk. It is a high risk.
Yeah, and these are fixed.
Yeah. So a fixed annuity with indexes is the safest way to go.
So when you say
they have good returns, and they're for anyone at any age.
So it mirrors the stock market, but it's not in the stock market. What does that?
It's never directly in the stock market, which makes it safe. Investments are at arm's length. If the stock market goes up, this mirrors it; it'll go up. If the stock market goes down, this doesn't do anything because you don't own any stock. You don't own any mutual funds. Okay, you own a life insurance product. You're invested in a life insurance index annuity. That's what makes it safe.
Yeah, and we know
you're over
that,
here on the sidelines.
Yeah, just more of like a spectator who, you know, is watching, but still, if the team wins, then you win. And so
that's right.
You're on the winning team no matter what happens because you're
that's
always
right. You
protecting.
Are. Because with annuity, it's an insurance product. It's safe. Your principal's always guaranteed. The interest can fluctuate up and down, but your principal does not fluctuate.
Yeah.
That's what makes it safe. And people have been buying annuities for years and years and years. They've gotten a lot better. When I started in business years ago, the only type of annuities that you could have was a fixed annuity. So whatever the fixed rate was, it was declared each year, and that's what you made. And then they came up with better products. And when they started doing indexes, that's what really put them on board.
Because
the bonuses are great. This has been a good year for bonuses. And because, you know, 2 years ago, we didn't have any bonuses. There was none. But now the time has come. They're doing bonuses. And I kept thinking earlier in the year they were going to stop, but they didn't. So we're still doing as long as they will.
So that's just free money on top of whatever you make. It has nothing to do with, you know, percentages and
no, it doesn't.
It's just
this is on top. When you first go in, they're going to give you that bonus, okay? So if it's $100,000, it's $14,000right there added to it. If it's $250,000, it's about $34,000,
$35,000. Wow. Cha-ching. It's just
yes.
Free money.
It is.
I listened to all this, and I wondered to myself why people don't do, historically speaking anyway, why people haven't done more annuities than they have.
Well, they're doing more and more and more every year. Millions and millions are in annuities.
Yeah.
That's your safety place. Because life insurance companies, they have $1 trillion. They have to have reserves, which banks don't put up near the reserves that an annuity company does. They have a lot of reserves that are required because someone could die at any time, and they have to be able to fund this, whether it's an annuity or a life insurance policy. They have to be able to pay off right then. And when we're doing life settlements, once we get them the death certificate, those life insurance companies pay off in about 12 days.
Wow, that's fast.
It is. We've got one right now that's running a little over. We haven't had that happen in a long time. And I don't know what they're running over for because most of them, we've done 5 million in maturities this month.
Golly.
We've had 5 million.
Really?
Yes.
And just in one month.
$5 million.
Not the year, the month.
Yes.
Wow.
This month, we've had 5 million in maturities. More than we've had in a long time. And there were several of them were $1 million. One of them was $250,000. I think one was $500,000. And they've all been really great policies. Their return was great on all these, really.
Wow. I'm just, you know, when you say that, you know, there's this one now that's a little bit late, it's all that means is that people are going to get paid for that waiting time, right? I mean, they're going to make more money.
Oh, yeah. It's to their advantage, really, because they'll pay extra interest if it takes over, you know, a certain length of time. They start paying interest on top of what they're going to make.
Yeah.
And we've had that happen several times, and we've talked about it in the past. They should hurry and pay, because it costs them extra money if they don't.
Yeah. And everybody, I'm sure people are in that mindset of like, oh, wow, this, you know, this maturing, I want to get paid. Yeah, everybody wants to get paid, and you still will. But if there's a delay, you're making extra money for it. So it's kind of like a win-win no matter what happens. If they're on time.
That's right, because you know you're going to get your money.
Yeah.
Somebody called the other day about a policy, and they said, well, is the money in my account yet? I can't see it. I said, no, remember, we always send you an email telling you that it's going in the bank. And that's another thing we do. When the first happens and they pass away, we send everybody an email then that's in that policy and say, somebody has matured. We're fixing to send for the death certificate, and we'll let you know. So then when they send out the check and we know it's there at the bank, we tell them, the money's going in your account tomorrow. And sometimes it takes Nevada Trust a couple of days to post it to their account, because sometimes if it's $1 million or something dollars, it takes them a day to at least to post it.
Yeah, that's understandable. I mean, when large amounts, you know, are transferred in banks, I mean, those kinds of things will take a minute. But, I mean, still, I mean, we're talking about a chunk of money, and it's not like, you know.
We're talking about a lot of money.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, when you have money on deposit there, and we have a lot of money on deposit right now, millions on deposit with Nevada Trust.
Wow.
I think there's probably 20-something million dollars on deposit right now.
Good Lord.
Client money. And when that money is sitting there waiting for policies, you get paid. You get paid interest every day that you have money there. So your money's not just sitting there. It's not like a bank account where you have a bank account and they go, sure, you've got a bank account with us, but they're not paying, you know, interest on it.
So
and these, they pay interest every day.
Well, then that seems like it would also be another advantage, if I'm understanding right, because if there are, say, you know, and these things will happen all the time, you know, sometimes there's a bunch of policies available, sometimes there's not, and, you know, it's just normal ebbs and flows of how the process works. So even if there's an occasion where maybe you're a little lower on available policies, people are still making money anyway. It's not
That's
just...
That's right. You're always making money that way, because you're getting paid if you're just sitting there.
Wow.
So it doesn't matter. You're getting paid either way.
I mean, I just...
We've had $10 million in maturities. The reason I know it is we're now showing $90 million that we're managing. We're managing $90 million instead of $100.
God.
So we've had, this summer, we've had $10 million mature.
I'm just, you know, you start talking about these volumes of money that you're managing and the amount of money that people are making, at least the ones that are like extra fully invested.
Fully invested, yes.
It's just, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, 15 or 20 bucks here or there. We're talking about millions of dollars. We're talking about people's, you know, portfolio. We're talking about people's wealth. We're talking about, you know, what people are going to be able to do when they get to retirement and even after retirement with the amount of money that they've made in a very safe, conservative kind of way without having to worry about, oh my gosh, something may happen and then I have to go back to work when I'm 85 years old. And it's just...
That's right. And it can happen if you're in the stock market.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. You know, lots of times they're not put in the right investment, or sometimes they think it's the right investment, and they have big losses. And sometimes people have big losses in real estate.
Yeah.
And it didn't used to be that way. But this has been a crazy year. Real estate is up and down, just like the stock market right now. And this week the stocks, you know, tanked again, And why be in something that you have to worry about and get up at midnight and check it? Why not either be in life settlement, which is an insurance product, or an annuity, and you don't have to check either one every day?
You know, I get the fact that some people, you know, want to swing for the fences. They want to hit that, you know, that they want to hit the home run or the grand slam, you know, right off the bat. And they think, okay, if you know, the stock market explodes, I'm going to make all this money. I understand the excitement of that. And I understand the excitement of, you know, just the ups and downs. And people, there are people that actually like, you know, where are we at today? How are we doing? And, you know, they get into the chase. But I would think, for me anyway, from my perspective, at the bottom, at the end of the day, the bottom line, the only thing that matters is what's on the spreadsheet. Did you make money? Or, you know, after 20 years of being in the stock market, how much have you actually made? Yeah, you've had some good ups. You've had some not so good downs. And, you know, in the end, did it just wash out and you ended up kind of where you were? Or did you lose money? And you don't know. And so you're playing with your retirement. You're playing with your entire lifestyle at that point. And so I would think that, you know, hey, you know, this is fun over here, but what's our goal from investing? Do we want the excitement, or do we want to actually make money in a conservative way? And when you put it like that, it kind of comes out as a no-brainer. It just seems like it's such a much better decision for people that want to actually grow their portfolio.
But what really worries me is the people that are in crypto.
Oh.
Because a lot of it's legitimate, a lot of it's going to make money. But how about all the ones that get scammed because they're innocent? They don't understand crypto.
Yeah.
And these people tell them they're putting it in it, and they didn't. You know, it's all a scam. So I would be very careful about crypto if I was the people. Hmm. I think it's eventually it'll be good, probably. But I think starting out, you know, people can steal this from you because it's not in your hand.
Yeah.
It's in thin air. And I was reading about that this week. This famous guy died, and his wife had her crypto wallet there and all this. The guy comes and steals all this.
Oh,
he
my.
He stole, like, you know, $2 or $3 million worth of crypto.
Really?
How do you get that back? You know, I don't understand crypto.
I don't either.
Yeah, because it's in your wallet deal, they call it.
You know, it's long gone, I think, are the days of when you had some money, you stuff it under the mattress and you could pick it up and touch it. And, you know, it was a substance. And so now we're kind of getting into like theoretical types of investments. And, you know, anytime something is this new, it takes many, many years to kind of iron out the, you know, the I guess the variables that affect it and, you know, kind of hammer things out a little bit, get it a little more targeted and narrowed down. Before it starts being a wise investment. At this point, you know, it almost seems like, and I say this without really understanding how it works, it seems like it's just kind of like, you know, shooting in the dark and hoping that, you know, you land on something profitable. I don't know, but.
Well, and you know, and everybody's doing a little bit of gold. And my theory about that is you put it at the bank. You do not keep it at your house ever.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's too dangerous. If you brag about you've got it, somebody will come and try to steal it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they will.
Because they can walk away with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not be walking away from it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I think it's scary. And all these people that brag about they've been buying gold and it's in their hand. I would never say that. I would not tell anybody I bought it, and I would put it at the bank.
Yeah.
I would not have it at my home under any circumstance.
No, it's too easy to. I mean, that's not something you really want to tell people anyway, because all you're doing is putting a target on your back.
They're advertising on television and telling everybody they've got it and that they love it and that they want to hold it in their hand.
Oh my word!
I mean, golly.
Oh, golly. Yeah. So, you know, when it comes down to it, and you've been doing life settlements for years and years and years, and you've already gone through, you're looking at those, you know, the ups and downs and the fine tuning and the honing in, and you're looking at that in the year, in the rearview mirror by a long shot. And so you've already kind of gone through all those, you know, ups and downs. And
we
went
through a lot of ups and downs. We made a lot of mistakes. We've corrected them. We've got it right now. We've got a good company. Making sure the payments are done to Nevada Trust and they send them in. You know, we're a lot better at it now than we were, a lot better.
Yeah.
So we're doing a better job. The maturities are better now. They're coming in on time. So we are, like you said, we've learned a lot, and we're doing a better job.
Yeah, and the information has gotten better, too, you know, even, yeah, just the people that you have looking at these. I mean, it's just gotten better, really, in every single way. And I can't think of another type of investment where people actually know what they're going to make ahead of time. You can't
That's
do
right.
it in the stock market.
And to make
market.
This kind of money.
Yeah.
You know, the average is 24%, and lots of times they make a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me the other day, said, Faith, what does people usually make? I said, we've had people make 49%.
Oh.
We've had them make 6%.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, if you buy a policy that they've got 4 months to live, you're not going to make but about 6 or 7% because they're not going to be here long.
Yeah. You know, and it's just, you look at the whole thing as an entire investment, you know, as a whole. And then you look at it and you think, okay, you're not going to get rich overnight. It's not swinging for the fence. It's not that grand slam. But your most successful investors aren't trying to do that anyway. They're in a number of policies at any given moment, and then the policies mature, and then they reinvest. It's not just, oh, I'm going to get into a policy today, and I'm going to retire a millionaire tomorrow. That's not how the investment is designed or set up or even supposed to work. And so how long would you say would be a good sort of middle of the ground kind of average for most people, if somebody was new, they had never, you know, done a life settlement before. If somebody was new and coming over, what would be the average, like, starting place for the good amount of policies and the amount of money they should invest?
Well, they need several. You can't do it with one policy. You can't say, I'll take $100,000 and put in a policy because it's not going to grow as much. But if you had several and you had $40,000 in each one or $50,000, you know, you've got three or four policies that one of them is going to come due, then the other one, then the other one. They're not going to all come due on time. They're not going to come due tomorrow. But let's say it's a 26 months. And the first one, you know, is going to come in at 26 or maybe 20 months. And then the next one and the next one. But you need several in order to be successful. You can't do it with one.
Yeah.
And I don't have anybody really that wants to do just one. Usually they'll bring $300,000 or $1 million or $1.5 million and say, put it in life settlements. There's two kinds of people. There's the life settlement crowd that loves it, that wants to invest in it, and that we recommend it every day. Or it's the annuity crowd, and the annuity people tell their friends all the time, you need an annuity with Faye. And I've got one client. They told her friend. She said, that money's just sitting there. Go and get an annuity.
Yeah.
You know?
If your money isn't making money, then you're losing money.
That's right. You're standing still.
Yeah.
You can't stand still in today's economy.
No.
You've got to be either making money, have money, or do without.
So
that's the three ways.
Is it fair to characterize an annuity as though, okay, you know what you're going to make, you know when the payout day is, you can put it on a calendar, it's regular, it's consistent. Is that a good way to characterize an annuity?
It is. It's consistent. It is regular. Every year you have a choice. Now, somebody told me the other day, say, I don't have to take 10% of it. I said, no. You can say, no, this year I want to take 4% or 5%. You know, it depends how much you need. And then you can stagger your annuities. I have some ladies that years ago, they staggered theirs. They did three annuities. They started taking it out of one and the other one. They held back the last one. And they've never used it. So it's doubled over the years.
That's a genius idea.
Because, yeah, if you never take it out, the thing will double in about 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, now that's the kind of thing that you can count on, and you can say, okay, now in 10 years when I retire, then I'm going to have this amount from this investment, and it's going to be there and ready to go. Now, that's kind of a bit of a I guess, a, it's the opposite of a life settlement, because you don't know the exact day. You can't put it on the calendar. It's, it, you know, some, like you say, some may go over, some may come in early, some may come on in time. You have a pretty good estimate of when it's going to be, but it's just that. It's an estimate. But they have gotten a lot closer. They've gotten a lot more precise when they look at those things. I would say that's probably one of the biggest things that has improved with a life settlement over the years. Would you agree?
Yes. And of course, what I love about a life settlement, of course, is the fact that we use a trustee for everything. You know, we don't handle the money. All the money goes to Nevada Trust. It's managed for us by Nevada Trust. And they, you know, they've been nominated for everything in the world in Las Vegas. They've been in business 26, 27 years.
Wow.
And they do a good job for us. We started out with them. We would never think of using anybody else because they know their business. They learned how to do it, and they're doing it right.
So with with a life settlement, we know all the advantages. Kind of walk through kind of like how the process works. Where do these come from? How do you get policies?
Okay.
And then what happens?
We bid on policies every week. These providers that we use, there's about five or six of them, they'll send us a policy and say, Faye, would you like to bid this policy? Would you look at it? So we look at the health. We look at the, what's wrong with them, what kind of cancer it is. We look at what they think, how long they think they'll live. We look at it and see if we think they're sick enough. Have they been in the hospital enough? Has it metastasized? Has it went from the neck to the stomach, to the ribs? You know, if it's in the lymph nodes, they don't really have a chance. But if they say it's not even in the lymph nodes, they might survive this thing, okay? So we want to be sure that it has moved, that it has metastasized to other places. If it has, we're interested. Then we look to see what the premium is. Is the premium low enough that we can make money and the client make money? Then we look at the age. Every bit of this is critical. And we only go to 76. So we look at all that. If it makes that, then we bid it. If we get it, then we'll have a select group of people that we're going to send it out to and say, okay, would you like to invest in this policy? We'd like to see you put $50,000 in. So that's how it works. Then when it matures, the money comes back to their account, and we do it again. So it's really pretty simple.
That is. I mean, that's really simple. If somebody's in, say, and I'm just making up numbers, if somebody's in, say, 10 policies, we know they're not, like you said before, they're not all going to mature the same day. So it's always kind of like playing leapfrog. One policy matures, turn around, reinvest it. Another policy matures, turn around, reinvest that. And before you know it, there's this compound aspect of, I guess, profit, or their portfolio starts to grow, and it's almost like a snowball effect. You know, it starts out small, and then, you know, as time goes on, and it really doesn't sound like it takes all that much time either, but that snowball starts to grow and grow and grow, and before you know it, they've exponentially grown their wealth, and now all of a sudden they're in a place where they can not only retire comfortably, but in many cases, I would imagine, more than comfortably, do the things that they've always wanted to do, whether it's travel the world or just, you know, take a drive around the country and see all 50 states or whatever it is. And then people know that they can do it in a conservative fashion because nothing will affect it. You know, there's never been an instance where there's been some kind of economic hardship globally where, you know, say a policy would mature and the insurance company says, you know, based on this and this and this, we're only going to pay a certain percentage of the policy. When it matures, it pays out 100%. Is that a...
That's one thing I love about life insurance companies. They have the money, they pay their claims, they're huge, and you need big life insurance companies for this. You don't need any little small companies, and you want to be sure they're A-rated, and all of them but one is, and the only one we ever do business with is not Genworth because they're worth $2 billion, and they're owned by somebody else, so they're huge. But everybody else is an A or A-plus company. That's another thing, that we look and we check on the assets of the company, where they're rated, and if they're okay. Because we don't want to buy a policy from some little bitty company.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, it's all, you know, you're talking about, you know, not doing about business with people that have been around for a long time. So they've got the foundation. The same thing applies to you, really, if you think about it, because you've been doing this for so long and you've, you know, successfully managed a ton of money, literally, for people. And you've got people that have grown their wealth, you know, year after year after year. And you've been doing this so long that you've got many investors that have been with you for a long period of time who have referred other people. And that in itself is a big thing to also, because people aren't going to recommend something that doesn't work or they don't like.
Well, yeah,
or
get a lot of recommendations,
yeah,
every week.
Exactly.
And you realize that some of my annuity clients have been with me so long, they're dying off now.
Oh my.
They've been with me that damn long. I mean, it's a
long
shame
time.
That they are.
I know it. It's kind of it goes a long way. You know, we say that because you would never tell, you know, a good friend of yours, hey, I tried this restaurant and the food was terrible. You should go there. Nobody does that.
Nobody would do that.
No.
And of course, there's a lot less restaurants this year than there were. You
know,
I both know that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Golly, they're closing.
They're
falling
like flies.
They really are. And that's a shame. And it's still, you know, this far after, you know, I understand it during COVID and, you know, people couldn't go in and eat and all that. But even still, this is like the residual effect. And then, you know, who knows what else? And it's just, you know, so many things have changed. Restaurants are hard to start to begin with. But we're talking about restaurants that have been around for a long time.
And they're all closing.
Yeah.
Some have been around 40 years. And they just said, you know, the cost of service is too high. Food is too high. And people have changed their eating habits all of a sudden.
Yeah.
People are not going out like they used to. Used to, everybody went out on Saturday night and had dinner. And you'd take friends with you. And you always went to a nice restaurant. People are not doing that anymore.
No. They're staying home.
Nope.
Or, you know.
They're staying home.
Or
they're having it sent in.
Yes.
That's the newest thing. You order all your dinner and have it sent to the house.
Yeah. We live in a society now where you can have everything delivered. You don't even have to go outside if you don't want to. And so,
that's what I'm worried about. We're going to all get so used to having everything sent in, you know. We won't even see the sunshine.
I know it. Just get yourself an incredibly comfortable chair, maybe a little massage chair. Just never get up and have everything brought to the door. You don't have to
see a person.
It's kind of sad in some ways. It's more sad than funny.
Well, and it worries me that all the Texas traditions are going out the window with all this sophistication.
Yeah.
Everybody's getting so sophisticated. All the ways that we knew as a child, and the things we did as a child, you know, you could send your kids out to play all day. Nothing was going to happen to them. Nowadays, you could not send your kids out to play.
No. Lord, no. Mm-mm. No. Yeah, because, I mean, there's just so many weird things that can happen. And
You can't do it.
And kids don't really want to go outside, I don't think, really much anymore.
They don't even understand about playing.
No.
They have iPads. They've given up on playing. It's a shame.
Yes. They even have devices that'll play for them, so they don't have to.
And they're not on Saturday morning riding their bike all over town.
Oh, I know.
Used to, kids did that.
Yeah, we did. We got up on Saturday morning, watched cartoons, and then when those were done, around, 10 o'clock or so, we were out on our bikes and didn't go home until sunset. It was great.
That's right, and nobody worried.
Yeah.
Small-town America was a good place to grow up and to raise your children.
It was.
And now everything is fast and furious. Your kids can't go out on their bikes. They've got to stay home. It's a whole new ball game out there.
Yeah, it really is. And it tends to segregate, segment us is more the term, because we end up living our lives in silos and we don't actually get out and socialize and we're not among people. And, you know, kids don't go out and hang out with friends as a group. They might, you know, maybe like video chat, you know, online or something with their devices, but hanging out in person, we're all kind of like, on our own little isolated island, I guess. And so it's...
Well, you know, Texas is a very diversified place.
Yeah.
And we have ranch after ranch after ranch. Now, all those kids that grew up, you know, a lot of them became millionaires. Their parents were wealthy, but they made them go to college, either agriculture college, A&M somewhere, and learn how to do all these things. And then a lot of them became ranchers, or they became president of oil companies. I was reading this week, this guy said he had all these young kids that worked for him on his ranch. He said three of them became millionaires.
Oh, wow. How cool.
The work ethic is there.
Yes, it is. And you don't find that in other states. You know? You won't read about
and
that.
In our small towns in Texas, they still, you know, the kids have to work for their allowance. They have to help. Whatever their father or mother do for a living, they have to help.
Yeah.
If it's a store, they have to go in there and work. If it's a farm or a ranch, they have to help.
Yeah.
And you don't see that anymore anywhere.
You really don't. You really don't. And that's one
of
the things.
I'm worried about the next generation.
I know it. Yeah, me too. And you know, when you have a ranch and you grow up on a ranch, you know, you've got to, you don't have the option of, oh, I don't feel like it today or I'm tired. No, that's not a thing. You got to get out. And so, you know, you have to get out and do things, and you really kind of, I guess,
and if they're baling hay, you're out there.
Yeah,
you know,
you're working,
moving the bales. There's so much a kid can do.
Yeah,
and if they have horses, you're watering them, feeding them, doing a lot of work, and it's good for kids.
It is. It's good for
their kids. yeah. You know, are terrible. I mean, I just don't know what to
say. I was waiting for that to come up. But yeah, you know, you get out and, you know, you experience nature, get in nature, breathe some fresh, clean air, and just, you know, just be outside and, you know, part of the earth. And it's just, I don't know, it's a dying breed. So I'm glad that we still have those things. So yeah, we've gone, those that are smart used to get up on Saturday morning and watch cartoons. Now they get up and listen to Your Money with Faye Bagby.
All right. I didn't know the kids would do that.
Oh, yeah. It's a new thing.
It's a new thing. Oh, my gosh. Well, maybe they'll bring their little pennies and invest with us, right?
Oh, there you go. I don't think there's too young of an age, I'm sure. Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
Our phone number is 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com. It's got a lot of great things. I hope everybody looks things up there.
Yeah, a ton of information. We can't get to all of it on the show. So, yeah, there's a bunch of knowledge, and maybe it'll answer some people's questions as well. So, all right, every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
The Goodyear blimp. Do you remember the Goodyear blimp?
Oh, yes. I used to love any time that thing would fly over and I'd see it. It was a big deal.
It was started in 1925.
Really?
The engineers designed it. It was a non-rigid airship that used helium instead of hydrogen.
Really?
And the first one was christened Pilgrim by Florence Litchfield. She was the wife of the Goodyear executive, Peter Litchfield. And that was the first time they used it for public relations. And then they built the Puritan, which became the first permanently licensed airship in the United States. Now then, the first home of the Goodyear blimp was Spring, Texas.
Of course it was, as it should be.
Of course it was. It came here in 1969. That was the real place it came. And it was the old silver one with the yellow letters.
The classic one.
Yeah, the classic. And it had the Goodyear in big yellow letters all over it.
Wow.
And it, as you know, it's a big, big ship. It's bigger than 3 football-sized swimming pools.
Are you serious? Really?
Yes. So it came to Spring, Texas. From there, it appeared at the Astrodome. It appeared, in all of our NFL games, if you remember this. And it flew over cities and people went crazy.
Yeah.
You know, when it appeared.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's 246 feet long. It's 58 feet high.
Really?
And it will hold 3 Olympic sized pools worth of helium. And it flies 1,500 feet, is about where it flies.
Really?
It takes 20 people to travel with it when it's on the road.
Really? It takes that many people to...
20 people, folks.
Wow.
So it's a good thing that Goodyear owns it because this is an expensive deal.
Yeah, it is. Golly.
And it just now came back to Texas after 10 years. Hadn't been here in 10 years. And after 10 years, it came to Austin. Everybody went crazy. Everybody's out taking pictures of it. And they were saying, keep an eye out for the blimp. And I know everybody used to see it flying over. We'd all get excited about it.
Of course,
but I did not know. Texas, that's part of Texas history, everybody says, is the blimp being in Texas. It was the home to the Goodyear blimp.
I did not know that. I never really thought about it, but I didn't know that. I thought I would have, at least heard it in passing at some point. But
yeah, the first home for it was Spring, Texas.
Wow.
And so everybody says that's part of our Texas heritage, is that we had the Goodyear blimp in Spring, Texas all those years. And then when it left in 1992, people were taking pictures of it as it left town.
Hmm.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
After all that time, and everybody probably thought it was going to stay in Texas, but it didn't.
Hmm.
And now it's come back after 10 years being gone and did a performance in Austin, Texas.
Wow. Well, this is where it should be.
That's right.
To have a blimp that big, that's what about.
It's so great. And, of course, it performed at the Houston Airport when it opened in 1969.
Wow.
And it was all over Texas in those years, and everybody got used to it, and I know I did. I loved seeing it. And over the NFL stadiums, all these different places.
Mm-hmm.
But in 1992, everybody videoed it leaving town.
Yeah. I remember, before, and I want to say it was like football, like Monday night football. It would be, you'd look for that. And a couple of days beforehand, you'd start to see it flying over overhead. And then they
started.
Yeah, they had like the
remember,
TV
it took
crew.
A long time for it to fly to where it was going.
It did.
And it would leave the day before or 2 days before an NFL game.
Yeah. Yeah,
and during the game, it was always hovering over the stadium. Remember?
Yeah, and they would always point it out. They'd point the cameras up there, and there's the Goodyear blimp, and you could see it. And didn't they have, or maybe I'm just making this up, but it seems like they had some kind of video equipment in the blimp at some point.
They did. I remember that.
Yeah.
And at one time, they let people ride the Goodyear blimp. I don't remember when it was, but it seems like there was one time. And they offered some rides in the blimp.
Really? Now, that would be cool.
Yeah.
That would be terrifying.
It would really be cool because it's so famous. And, they built three of them.
Was there three?
Yeah, there was actually three built.
Huh.
And that lady named them all.
I'm just so fascinated with how that even works. It doesn't make any sense to me to look at it and say, okay, there's a
it's
blimp
just floating along on this helium.
Yeah, I'm like, boy, it seems like if somebody was to throw a rock at it, it would just like pop it like a balloon, and you'd be in trouble. And I know it's not made that way, but that's what it looks like. It's like,
remember, it doesn't even fly high.
I know,
1,500 feet.
Yeah, of course it.
So whoever's flying it has to really look out for everything.
Yeah. I mean, golly, you're there could be all kinds of things going on. There could be, that's not like a commercial air flight. They're at, 30,000 feet, something like that.
That's right.
So nowhere near it. But, there's things that are going up and down. And then you've got, crop dusters. You've got helicopters. You've got, all these other things that are in that, I don't know what you call it, that space at that height. Who knows what could happen. But, to look at it.
They probably have to look out for birds, too. it's that hot.
Yeah.
But, it's been in service so long, and it was stationed here in Texas, first place it's ever had a home.
Yeah.
So it meant a lot to Texans having the Goodyear blimp right here, and it went to so many things. And then when they left, everybody was pretty sad. And then they came back this year. Oh, this is the 100th anniversary of the Goodyear blimp.
Oh, my word. Have you ever seen it up close, like in person?
No. I've seen it from a distance, but I've never seen it real close.
Me either. I don't even know if you can. I don't know of anybody who ever has. But I would imagine probably standing next to it, it would feel like, it looks like this little tiny thing. It looks like a football
shape.
Oh, you'd
look like a little tiny person, yeah. You know, like a little dwarf of some kind. Yeah, because it is so big and huge. Yeah. It is very impressive, let me tell you something. And the engineers that thought this up were geniuses.
Yeah, they are. It makes no aerodynamic sense to me. Not that I'm qualified in aerodynamics at all, but it just doesn't seem like it defies logic. I don't understand how it works or how it moves, how it stays afloat. It's just, you know, I don't know.
Obviously the hydrogen keeps it going.
Yeah.
But they're able to steer it. They can do all this stuff, you know?
And it takes 20 people to pilot this craft.
They send 20 people along to help with the balloon.
Wow.
That's 20 people.
Oh, man. That's
Imagine
incredible.
A lot of them is to tie it down when they get there, to get it ready for liftoff, all the different things they have to do.
Oh, yeah. And what do they do when it's this is going to be a dumb question. I just heard it in my head before I said it. But what do they do when it's not flying? I mean, do they deflate it and roll it up like a sleeping bag?
I've always heard that they tied it down somewhere and took it indoors.
Really?
Yeah.
I knew that was a dumb question.
And I may be wrong about that, but I'm thinking I saw it somewhere.
Huh. Well, I'll be. It's fascinating to me.
The engineers at Goodyear thought this up. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
And it became famous. It goes all over the United States. Oh, and it also goes to Germany.
What? Does it really?
It's been to Germany performing also.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Wonder how long it took to get
there. Can you imagine flying this thing to Germany?
No. I can't.
That'd be a little bit scary.
Yeah, it
if
would.
The wind got real high.
Yeah.
But that's probably why it only flies 1,500 feet in the air, where they can get it down real quick.
Yeah, I'm sure. But boy, a good gust of wind comes along, and instead of being in Germany, you may be at the North Pole. Golly.
That's right. A good gust of wind, no telling where you might end up.
Yeah. I don't know that I'd be comfortable, but boy, it would be cool. If you could just go up it at one time, I think that would be just life-changing. And I don't think you can. But.
And I really believe I read that years ago. I should look that up. But I think they actually let some people ride in it.
That would be cool. If they still do that, and I don't know if they do, but if they did, boy, I would have to consider.
I don't think it's a usual deal. It was something special, but I don't remember. Maybe it was somebody wanted to interview them. I don't remember.
Oh, that would have been
cool.
But
I remember it shoved the inside of the blimp.
Yeah. Boy, I remember seeing those things when I was a kid. And it's just that, you know, the Goodyear blimp came over. Boy, that was a big deal.
It is really a big deal. And it was in Texas when it was stationed here. It went everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
And
it would fly out of state and come back because this was its headquarters. The first home of the Goodyear blimp in Spring, Texas.
It needs to be in a museum where we can go and see it.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah. That would be pretty cool. Or maybe like, you know, obviously tie it down, but maybe like walk in and do like a tour, you know, without flying, but just walk into the basket or the bottom.
Well,
or
be able to go up there and go in it.
Yeah. That would be pretty neat. Wow. Cool.
And I don't remember anything about the pilot. I should, but I don't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, golly, with that many people, I mean, it's not just one little, hey, let's just go up for a little ride and spin around and come back down. No. I mean, that takes a whole crew.
You know, it doesn't matter whether it's men, women, or children. Everybody loves seeing it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's
one of those things. It's universal. We all love it.
Yeah. It's iconic, and it goes back, you know, all the way. I can't think of a single person that wouldn't have remembered that from their childhood. Not a single one of us.
I don't either, because I know we all did, and everybody loved it. We talked about it. We were so impressed by that big thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you look up the sky and it's flying over, that's very, very impressive.
Yeah, and we're still talking about it, even to this day.
We're still talking about it, and we're not even teenagers.
No. Wow. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's American Financial Midland.com.
All right. We kind of touched on this briefly earlier, but for the risks involved with a life settlement, there are two. What is the first one?
The biggest risk would be if it goes over and you have to pay premiums. You have to know what the premiums are. It's always in the contract. We always tell you up front, and we have to try to get the lowest premiums in town. So that's your first risk. The other one is, remember, it's not liquid until it matures, and I think most people know that. You must be accredited. You must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million without your home. You cannot count the home. So that's the risk right there.
You know,
not much to it.
Yeah, when you're talking about those premiums, I mean, that's been a thing that's gotten better and better, too. And you've got a hard job because...
We've got that down.
Yeah.
We had some high premiums. We didn't realize they were that high, and now we've got it down to almost nothing.
I mean, golly, you know, when you're sitting there and you're balancing, you know, how far can we go, you know, to not only bid, but then the premium, but then the LE and all this, you're weighing all these things together to decide if it's even a good policy to bid on. And then during the bidding process, how far can we go and still be profitable and keep the premiums low? And I mean, you're balancing a lot of data when you're going through these policies before they're even available to people. So, I mean, just the fact that you've got it down the way you do is impressive all in itself.
But it took time and years in the making.
Yeah. What about annuities? Are there any risks with those, or is it just
not really? It's an insurance contract. It doesn't have any stocks in it, so it's not risky. It doesn't have any mutual funds, so it's not risky. It's a solid investment for conservative people.
Right. Set it and forget it and just wait to get paid.
Set it, forget it. Take your money out every year or don't take any and, you know, wait 5 years and start taking it. You'll have a lot more money.
Yeah. All right. So if people want to explore either option or both, you do have, we don't want to make it sound like you have to do one or the other. You have plenty of investors that do both life settlements and annuities. So that's an option.
I have some new investors that are doing both.
Oh, wow. Cool. Great. Yes. So for people to get started or get more information, they do need to call and make an appointment. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.